Nicole Fortune, and welcome to another episode of the Pillow First Session podcast. Except today we are doing our podcast within a podcast, and it's called What the What? And we're going to be talking about stuff that you may have heard in previous episodes of the Pillow Fort, and you may not have caught just what they were. And I am here today with a very, not very special guest. Because you're here for every episode.
I am behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes, it's Mike Young.
It's me. Yeah, I'm here every episode. I do all the audio.
Yes. How does it feel to be inside the Pillow Fort today?
I'll be honest. This is the first time I've been in the Pillow Fort since our original dry run.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from setting it up,
mm-hmm.
is very strange.
Is it?
But it is much more professional than the first time we did it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. No, it's. It's surreal.
Oh, that's nice. That's a nice word. What is strange about it?
I mean, the setup's good. We actually have a decent mic setup now.
Oh, no, I mean for you.
Oh, I just mean in general. It's a lot better. So being in here, it seems more professional. It seems like we have it a bit more together.
You're having a little bit of imposter syndrome?
Yeah, I mean, this is almost studio-esque.
Oh. Hey, now. Don't get people's hopes up.
I'm just saying. Seems a lot better than before.
Oh, come on, Smitty. You know, both of his parents are in the Pillow Fort, so he's coming over here. All right, so thanks, Mike, for being on the other side. And today we're going to teach you a little bit of something. A little something.
A little something we may have missed.
Yeah, and a couple of our guests have mentioned something that I find really interesting, and that is attachment theory.
Yeah, so we had a little bit of a conversation prior to the recording, but what is attachment theory? What is attachment theory?
So, attachment theory was created back in the 1950s by John Bowlby. Thanks. I forgot how to use an iPad for a second. It's basically a theory that describes the mother-child relationship or caregiver-child relationship. And he said that in the first year of life, based on how much your caregiver attends to you and how attached a child is to them determines pretty much how your relationships are for the rest of your life.
Like personal relationships, friendships,
all that.
Kind of all of the
yeah.
above?
Your attachment with your caregiver, back in 1958, particularly your mother, would predict how you turn out as an adult.
Yeah, that was one thing we discussed, I think, in the original topic was, is it only mothers?
Yes, yes. In recent years, they have expanded it to caregivers in general, but for Bowlby, who had a poor relationship with his own mom and was raised by his in-home nanny back then in Britain, I believe, was called, thanks, Smitty, a governess.
Fancy.
Very fancy boy. He created the attachment theory. And I have some great examples of attachment theory today.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more about it.
Yeah. So the first type of attachment is secure attachment, and we have a perfect example of that right here in the background. Smitty Jerome the dog.
Oh, Smit J. Bub.
We get our pet passer in here to give us the exhibit A. Smitty Jerome.
Come here, junky boy.
Smitty Jerome the dog. So why is Smitty securely attached? Well, he lets you pick him up. He lets you hold him. He loves love. For the first few years of his puppy life, he was well taken care of. You can flip him. You can flap him. He doesn't freak out when we leave. He's excited when we come back. He trusts us. We are what Bowlby would call his safe space. His sort of his where he can return and feel comfortable. So he knows that no matter what, mommy, daddy dog are always going to be here. And while he's sleeping, while he's awake, he doesn't have to worry.
Yeah.
Secure.
That all makes sense and very true about Smitty.
Very true.
So with secure attachment, that is, I'm assuming the best kind of attachment.
That is the best kind of attachment.
The best case scenario, feel safe with in relationships.
Yes.
You can trust people. You can trust, I guess, you know, the people that you're having a relationship or friendship or whatever the case is.
Not only that, but when you are securely attached, according to the original theory, you are going to be a more confident person, you're going to be a happier person, and you're going to turn out better in the long run as far as your job prospects and your interactions with others.
Overall. Okay, so this goes even deeper into your kind of overall well-being outside of just relationships. It is, you know, jobs, it is your own confidence level.
According to Bowlby, yes.
Okay.
So if your mom or caregiver, you were securely attached to them and you felt safe, then you would grow up to be a happy kid and therefore a happy adult.
Fair enough.
Right. So, thank you, Smitty. What a great exhibit. Thank you.
Literally laying on my foot.
Because he's so securely attached. He knows that foot is safe.
The most secure boy.
The second one is our guest for the weekend. My mom's lovely little chihuahua. She's so dead. Oh my god, people are gonna love the sound of that.
Yeah.
My mom's, how big is she? Yeah, but she was a year and a half, but weight size, like what? 3 pounds? 3 pounds, 6 ounces. Chihuahua, teacup chihuahua, Gizmo. She's super cute. She's got a really big head, and she has ginormous ears. And I love her.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, it's hard not to. She's so tiny.
She's so little. But she is a perfect example of the next style of attachment, which is avoidant attachment. So in her case, we have an idea of how she was raised when she was a baby puppy, but you know, according to some of her behavior and of attachment theory, we would say that she's avoidant because she's very scared all the time. She shakes a lot. She cries when Erica's laughing. She cries when Erica leaves the room. She cries when Erica goes back to the room. She doesn't really trust that people are going to take care of her. And this can become, in the human way, or maybe in dogs too. Her mother may have been very distant, very dismissive, a little critical. Maybe a little irritable at times. And so she doesn't really trust that somebody's going to take care of her. So she's always kind of scared.
Yeah, I think the term that we settled on was just anxious.
Just anxious all the time.
She has, she has separation anxiety.
She has been diagnosed by her veterinarian with separation anxiety.
Yeah, I honestly haven't seen anything like it. But literal, like, death squealing. Like
howling.
Yeah, like someone's beating on her. It's intense.
If you leave her by herself. And we would consider that avoidant attachment. And the same can be said with humans, too. And according to Bowlby and Hainsworth, as adults, those children continue to be that way in their adult lives, in their relationships. They're very untrustworthy of people. Or they're very clingy. They're afraid that people are going to leave them all the time. They have a hard time separating from people because they're like, oh, I don't want you to leave me because I need this. And sometimes they don't do very well. They feel very rejected. They have low self-esteem, and they have a lot of toxic stress in their life.
Yeah, and again, I think that makes sense. You know, going back to the secure attachment, you have that level of confidence because you know your relationship, you know you're safe and you're comfortable, mm-hmm. whereas having the anxiety around, like, I think the term you used was needing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need someone, you need that person for protection, you need that person to make you feel safe, to make you feel comfortable, as opposed to just feeling that way in a relationship.
Yeah.
You need that from someone else, and I think that definitely makes sense to feed into, you know, the other facets of your life.
Right. Well, if I don't feel good enough, then am I going to feel good enough to apply to the school that I think I won't get into, or apply for this job that I feel like I won't get? Some people who's, according to Bowlby, whose mom was kind of distant or dismissive or critical, they can become avoidant adults, according to them. But I will say, now that she's up here hanging out in the pillow fort, and now that she's with my mom and my grandmother and my brother, Gizmo is so spoiled. She is a queen. She is treated very well. She has a lovely life.
She does, but I think, you know, that could also kind of compound the...
She might just be anxious because she's a chihuahua and also because she's super spoiled.
Yeah. Not only does she need you to feel safe, but she needs you to eat all her fancy foods and
to be
carried everywhere.
To be hand-fed.
Literally hand-fed, yes.
Yeah. So who knows? Who knows what it is? We love her. We love you, Kizzy. Thank you for being in the Villaport. And so there's a third form of attachment theory, and we have the perfect example of that too in this house.
Do tell.
Where is he? Where did he go? And that's the perfect example of why he is the third type of attachment, which is ambivalent attachment. And that's Miles Morales, the cat.
I do love Miles Morales.
Miles does not love me, or at least show me love, as much as we show him, and that's because of his ambivalent attachment. Miles spent the first years of his we still can't find him, of his kittenhood in a shelter.
Yeah, first 9 months.
The first 9 months of his life in a shelter. So his attention and his attachment with humans, or maybe even his mom, was inconsistent. People were kind of indifferent. The shelter was kind of, you know, they're a shelter, so he's
Speak
not.
Of the devil.
There he is.
Oh, come here,
Super
orange
Miles.
Baby.
Yeah. So, look at all that hair.
You probably can't see right now because we're recording this, but. He doesn't like being held.
He does not
and
like
I am
being
holding
held
him.
For very long.
Yeah, I think ambivalent's a great term. He could take us or leave us.
Take us or leave us because his love in his first few months of life was very inconsistent, right? And so now he doesn't trust when we do show him affection because he's like, I don't know how long that's going to last. I don't know if you mean it. And he's been here for almost 2 years now, and he still is...
Yeah, we're on year two now.
Yeah, he's still really warming up to us.
Yeah, I think the change I'm seeing here, though, is he is not as attached to anybody. He's
right.
only attached to himself, really. So he doesn't rely on us for anything.
Right.
The only thing I would say is he's slowly coming around to, like, relying on us for, like, food and things.
But as adults, what has been said about this particular form of attachment is that these are the people who are very standoffish. They are very slow or apprehensive about forming relationships with people because maybe they didn't get that attention from mom that was consistent. So they don't trust people to stick around. And so rather than being hurt, they aren't going to form relationships at all so that they're not disappointed. And it's the same in their work life or maybe their school life where they're like, you know, why even bother? It might not work out.
Yep.
It's sad.
Yeah, it definitely, it's funny when we compare Miles to it, but it's definitely sad.
It is sad because we love Miles so much, and we try to tell him all the time, but he's just like, I just still do not know about y'all yet, except this water. I know about that. And he loves the pillow fort.
Yeah.
When we're not in it.
That's true as well.
Yeah, when we set it up and it's empty, he likes to hang out in it. Oh, man, I'm glad that our refrigerator is making ice right now.
You know, there's no way of avoiding this much noise in an apartment. In the midst... Actually, we didn't even bring this up. This is the middle of, 2 months into
quarantine.
So this is the first in-person, like, in Pillow Fort session you've done.
Right, with my partner, because you live here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We've been stuck here for, like... months. There's no way avoiding all this noise.
No. But actually, it's really quiet, and I'm surprised that Smitty has only barked a few times, so that's cool. But anyway, ambivalent attachment is Miles.
Yes.
And, as an adult, these people sort of, sometimes they can be angry, sometimes they can be stressed, impulsive, unsociable, aggressive is what I'm reading here.
Kind of like a loner.
Kind of like a loner, and But we'll talk about what you can do about your particular attachment style, because I don't want to be too negative here in a bit. But the last one that we thankfully don't have an example for, the final attachment style that Bowlby and Haynesworth sort of talked about in their work, is disorganized attachment. And you see this a lot with, well, no offense to G, but I think she would agree with her dog, Rufus, who was extremely abused, right? And now, you know, he sort of reaches out for attention or reaches out for pets sometimes, but also he's very afraid of people. Because he was so abused that he doesn't trust at all whether people are going to hurt him or love him. So when you go over a house, you have to be really sweet to him because he is just so fearful. But as soon as you give him a little bit of attention, he feels a little bit more comfortable. And the same can be said with kids who are really abused or are raised as babies in the foster system. Sometimes they exhibit disorganized attachment because their mom or caregiver was unpredictable. They inspired fear. They were a drug addict, or they themselves suffered from a mental disorder. So they really couldn't care for them.
Yeah.
So yeah, poor Rufus.
I think that actually feeds back into some of the, like you said, not to be negative, but feeds into some of the negative things from the other attachments.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You have that, why bother? Because, you know, putting that much effort into someone who never worked out before.
Right.
Right? You have that avoidance. You have that wanting to be alone and not wanting to go into that. But also, you have the clinginess of wanting that because you haven't had it.
Right.
And so you have kind of like two conflicting emotions going back and forth, which just, I guess, is dead on for disorganized.
Yeah.
You have definitely kind of like hot and cold going at each other. Yeah. So that makes that person sporadic, and that makes it a lot more unpredictable, like you said.
Unpredictable and hard to be in a relationship with them, and hard to be that person in the relationship because you're like, I can't really understand where this is coming from. I just am trying to figure out myself. Some days I'm like this, some days I'm like this, because I never really had that safe, secure feeling like Smitty does, or like a kid who was raised in a loving, safe home.
Yeah.
You just never know when the ball's going to drop. But you still want that attention so bad.
Yep.
It's really sad. And so those adults sort of, they also have low self-esteem. Sometimes they can be kind of passive. But they, in the studies, and I won't get into those because it'd be really long-winded, but in some of the experiments that Haynesworth did with the babies, where she would put a stranger in the room with the baby, disorganized kids would sometimes, who had moms who were not present or had disorders, sometimes those babies would go to a stranger for attention instead of their moms because they were so confused as to, I mean, maybe this person will love me, or maybe this person will show me affection. Whereas the baby in the secure one was really excited to see their mom and didn't really fool with the stranger. It's a very interesting experiment that Mary Haynesworth did, and kudos to women in science.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if that experiment would be very ethical today, but yeah. Thanks. One day I'll figure it out. All right. So those are the four attachment styles. We got secure for Smitty, and we got avoidant for Gizmo, the scared chihuahua. We got ambivalent for Miles, who is looking down on us right now from his cat tower, and we got disorganized for, thankfully, a pet that we haven't experienced, but we would give lots of love to if we did have.
Absolutely.
Yes. So those are the four, and you know, I'm sure people who are listening now are like, dang, what are my pets, or what am I? And if you do find yourself in, you're like, man, I definitely have an avoidant attachment or an ambivalent attachment with my parent or caregiver, what can I do? I think you can guess what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I'm guessing that it's therapy.
It's therapy! It's therapy. Call someone. Go to Psychology Today or wherever you need to, or the phone book if those still exist, and get you a therapist. Because this is manageable, right? If you talk to somebody who's aware of attachment theory or who goes by attachment theory, they can say, you know what? We are going to process that relationship that you had with your caregiver, and we are going to change those cognitions and help you reevaluate your worth and the relationship that you had with that person.
It doesn't have to define you.
It doesn't have to define you.
Yeah, you just got
to
work through it.
So yeah, DBT is good for that. CBT is perfect for that. And I would say even EMDR, which we have an episode about, will literally take you back to those memories with that person.
Help you reframe it.
And help you reframe it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's great stuff out there. A little disclaimer, though, before we go, is that back, so we said in the beginning, Bowlby created attachment theory back in the 1950s.
Yep. Yep.
Not a very valid study that he did. The first one was with Reese's monkeys, and then he just applied it to humans. But also that was, oh, look at her sleeping. That was almost 70 years ago. And back when he was talking about this, he was only talking about well-to-do white people.
Yeah, there's a lot of variation here that could be brought into the experiments.
Absolutely.
And like you said, I think some of these are completely unethical, but we do have this theory out of it.
It is a theory.
And it's a theory, which is important to preface. So.
Yeah. So we have to take it with a grain of salt. And people do, especially I've read a lot of stuff online about men who are like, attachment theory, and moms, what about dads? Do we matter at all? That's a relevant point. Does attachment with dads affect the relationship you have with people or your upbringing? Of course it does. And so do natural disasters. So does genetics. So does epigenetics. So does environment. So does chemtrails. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
It's okay, there's a YouTube rabbit hole we can find.
Okay, we'll have to do that after I guess. I'm sure it has something to do with the world being flat.
You know what? No comment.
Okay. So a lot of people are still using it to sort of guide how they take care of their clients. But some people are really moving away from it because they're like, when this was thought up, it really wasn't applicable to everybody. And also, how you were treated by your mom the first year of your life going to affect you for the rest of your life? Is that really fair? And a lot of people now would say, no, it is not. But it's cool to talk about.
True, and very interesting. I think since it came up, there were questions, at least that I had. So I think this filled in some blanks, hopefully for listeners as well.
Yeah. Do you have any other questions? I might not be able to.
I don't really have any other questions around this, but I mean, this is not the only what the what.
It's not.
It's the first of hopefully many.
You're right. I think the next episode we're going to try to do is one of my favorite topics, which is Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yes, that's going to be a fun one.
Yes. So, yes. Mike, you'll be back in the fort.
Back in the fort, yes.
Back in the fort. Did you have fun?
I did. I had a great time.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for having me in my apartment.
Right? I can't wait to go back to our living room.
I know.
It's 6 feet away. Yeah. Gotta love quarantine.
Yes. Enjoy the pandemic, everyone.
See you next time. Bye, y'all.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Pillowfort Sessions podcast. We so appreciate your curiosity. This show was edited and produced by me, Nicole Fortune, and my partner, Mike Young. Background sounds and general cuteness provided by Smitty Jerome the dog and Miles Morales the cat. If you're listening on iTunes, please subscribe and leave us a review. It helps people find us. If you want to see video versions of sessions and or follow us on the social medias, check out our website, pillowfortpod.com. Do you or someone you know want to be in the Pillow Fort? Go email us right now at pillowfortpod@gmail.com. Is that good?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bye, y'all.